step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to Bat Flips and Nerds, the baseball podcast with a British twist. I'm your host this week, Darius Austin. Before we get started, just a few notes on where to find us. You can check out the website at batflipsandnerds.com, follow us on Twitter at batflips_nerds, and like us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/batflipsandnerds. Sadly, we're down three members of the normal crew this week. Ben is still on his summer holiday, which we suspect is just a whole month of watching Nolan Arenado highlights 24/7. Tom needs a break after using up all of his material this week. He thought of a particularly good pun for his Red Sox spin-off podcast, so he's out of material now. And John is hard at work on his new Side project, which is a podcast devoted entirely to indie bands from Boston who only wear Czech shirts. But you don't need to worry. It's not going to be me talking to myself for half an hour. I am joined again by our resident fantasy scribe and the Washington Nationals' third best bullpen option, Blake Finney. Blake, how are you doing?
Only the third? I'm a bit disappointed. I seem a bit far down there.
Well, I've got some reports from scouts saying that your curveball isn't what it used to be, so.
Yeah.
I guess, are you the best Blake in the Nats bullpen, do you think?
Oh, that's not a question. I've been calling for trying to get DFA'd for quite a while now.
Yeah, I saw they DFA'd Francisco Rodriguez today, so that experiment didn't last too long.
No, I'm not really surprised.
Right, well, we thought that nothing much might happen this week. Obviously, we're on the All-Star break, and so we've been devoid of baseball games for the past 5 days or so. But actually, there was a mega transaction. And before we get to talking to some All-Star stuff, we're actually going to talk about that, kind of a really big deal that everybody has been talking about lately. I am, of course, talking about the fact that Pablo Sandoval has been DFA'd, bringing rejoicing cries from much of Red Sox Nation, and then a lot of hot takes about how players are paid too much these days and all the usual nonsense. So, Blake, before I read a statement from our very own Red Sox contingent, do you have any thoughts on Pablo's DFA and do you think somebody else is likely to give him another shot at the majors?
Well, I think someone else will give him a shot, but I think the best thing to come out of this is we won't have to hear DFA Sandoval from our other hosts.
Yeah, I think he might have been brought up on almost every podcast this year, so it's probably a good thing that he's no longer going to be on Boston.
More space for important news.
Yeah, I'm not sure. They might just have to give up the podcast now, actually. They won't have anything to talk about. But before they miss the opportunity, and I'm sure there'll be more chat on this on their own little Red Sox project, which we'll talk about a bit later. But I have here the prepared statement from John and Tom, the Batflips and Nerds Red Sox contingent. They say, "We'd like to take this opportunity to thank Pablo for his contribution to on-field comedy and to the Boston late nighttime economy. He's kept late-night bars in profit single-handedly. We're sorry that we aren't available this evening to celebrate his best bits, literally one walk-off homer in Oakland whilst we ate breakfast, and worst bits, everything else. But we've decided to have a blowout. If you see a jolly-looking, red-faced, early-30s man stumbling around Manchester or West Oxfordshire, drinks are on us. Password is Panda." Slanche, which I believe is a Irish version of cheers. I'm not sure I said that right, but that was obviously the Boston connection there. So that's the official Batflips and Nerds Red Sox contingent statement. I know everybody's been waiting to hear that. And I'm assuming John and Tom will be having quite a few drinks tonight to celebrate. Right, moving on to the deal that actually got everybody talking yesterday, which was Jose Quintana heading to the Cubs for quite the haul of prospects, including Eloy Jimenez, who's very highly rated. So, Blake, I wanted to ask you, what do you think of the deal? Are you kind of thinking the Cubs are going to go on and win the division now? And do you think they gave up too much to get Quintana on the team?
I think they have given up quite a lot. So they've obviously given up Jimenez, who's generally a top 10 prospect wherever you look. They also gave up Dylan Cease. I think that's how you pronounce his name, who's another promising pitching prospect they've got. But I guess the thing with the Cubs is, even if they can't quite claw back the Brewers this year, Quintana's got another, I think he's got another 3 years of control. So it's something that they can still build their, in inverted commas, dynasty with. So they can compete for the next few years with this deal.
Yeah, definitely. I think Quintana is still under team control for quite a remarkable number of years as well. So it's not kind of a rental we've got going on here. It's not, I think, it's much less of a head scratcher for me than the Chapman trade, which obviously they gave up arguably an even better prospect for basically half a season of a reliever. So yeah, I think it kind of makes sense for them, although I suspect they may regret giving up some of these prospects down the line.
Yeah, but I guess if they win a World Series in the next couple of years, no one's really going to complain. It's like no one in the Cubs is bitter about giving up Torres because they won the World Series last year.
Yeah, I haven't seen too many Cubs fans complaining about that. So yeah, we'll wait and see on that one. But I certainly kind of still expected them to take over in the second half. So this just strengthens that case, I guess. On the topic of trades, we had kind of a few more we wanted to touch on, and I think specifically you were talking about some Justin Verlander rumours you'd heard. So are there kind of names that you're looking to see moved in the next few weeks, and where do you think players are likely to end up?
I think one thing that I saw quite recently was Verlander possibly to the Yankees. It kind of makes sense because the Yankees will be one of the few teams that could actually take on a large portion of the contract. So they could do that without giving up huge prospects because the Tigers will just be keen to get his contract off the payroll.
Yeah, absolutely. And I should mention at this point that just today it's been announced that Michael Pineda needs Tommy John surgery, probably. So they've got a hole there in their rotation. Hearing a lot about Sonny Gray, including some rumours that the Cubs are interested in adding him as well, even though they've just picked up Quintana. Any thoughts on landing spots for him?
Yeah, I think the Cubs is one, like you've mentioned, where the back end of their rotation has been fairly weak so far. The Brewers could probably do with adding a starting pitcher as well. Again, same with them. The back end of the rotation is weak. So, especially with, I don't think the A's are asking a huge amount for Sonny Gray, so there could be quite a few people interested in him.
Yeah, he's definitely kind of a guy with a few more question marks, I think. And we've seen Billy Bean make some fairly puzzling trades over the last few years as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was to give him up for maybe not the highest end prospects in the world. I think we should talk about the situation that's going on in Washington. As you're here and you're a resident expert, there's obviously quite a few guys out there on the relief market and bullpen arms on teams that aren't really contending at all this year. That would be a nice upgrade. Who have you heard linked the most to the Nationals, and who do you want to get in there? What would be your preferred choice for a bullpen upgrade?
I think everyone's heard the name David Robertson linked with the Nats quite a lot, purely because the White Sox are so far out of contention. They were never going to compete this year. So he's the name I've heard the most. I think I said it a few weeks ago when I was back on. I would have liked Kelvin Herrera, but somehow the Royals have clawed themselves back into contention, so I don't know if that's a thing anymore. So going back to Robertson, I was having a little play. I'll be Mike Rizzo for a bit, and maybe you could get David Robertson and a low-end star like Derek Holland, because we've had a bit of trouble at the back end of the rotation. Roark's been a bit inconsistent, and then Joe Ross may have an injury. So it's another way to improve the starting rotation without going out and getting one of the front end guys like a Verlander or a Sonny Gray.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Nats are pretty locked in at the moment for the division, but it would be nice, I think, certainly for the playoffs to have that another bullpen option, or maybe even two. Could you see them adding a second, or do you think they'll just make the one move in that regard?
I think all the noises coming out of DC are they only really want a proven closer to kind of shift everyone back into roles where they're more comfortable. So right now, we've got Matt Albers closing, as I've mentioned before, my cult hero and your cult hero until he got a save. So yeah, I think we could. So maybe someone like Brad Hand, who's been on the market a bit, but I don't know. It's not overly likely, I would say.
Yeah, I really like Brad Hand, but it does seem like they just want to get the one piece there. So it'd be interesting. Yeah, he's really come on a kind of a Andrew Miller-esque move to the bullpen and suddenly become this lights out pitcher. One thing I saw that was kind of interesting to me was some rumblings that if the Rangers kind of come out of the break slow, that they'll be looking at dealing both Yu Darvish and Cole Hamels. Do you see that as likely to happen? I know they've kind of made a lot of noises previously about trying to keep Darvish on the team and offering him an extension, but this is kind of the first that I've heard that they'd actually be willing to deal him.
Yeah, I think I saw something quite a while ago, and it probably doesn't help their cause that Houston are just an absolute monster right now. So it's difficult for the Rangers to even catch them and get anywhere near the division. So it's not overly surprising, but they've still got a really good team in Texas. I know I predicted them to win the division before the season, and I think I wasn't alone. So if they could keep the team together another year or two, who knows?
Yeah, on the topic of the Astros, you tipped me off to something earlier about Alex Bregman, who I think this sort of started as a fan talking about trading him and spiraled into Bregman actually sliding into his DMs and sort of giving him a bit of stick for criticising him. I kind of, on that topic, which major league players do you think would be best, kind of, would you most like to see kind of just going after fans on Twitters, getting into arguments with them, maybe just DMing them silly messages? Have you got any candidates for kind of Twitter DM warriors?
Well, with DM warriors, I think I was having a think, and maybe there's some kind of elaborate scheme going on with Jose Bautista and Irvin Santana, who seem to follow every single baseball fan under the sun on Twitter. So maybe it's an evil marketing scheme. They're going to start direct messaging everyone soon. But I guess the other guy I thought of was potentially David Price. I know they mentioned it on the podcast back on Monday, who comes out in fiery defence of his teammates. So seeing him go after a few people would be quite funny.
Yeah, he certainly doesn't seem to be too shy about airing his views. If you haven't listened to Monday's podcast yet, anyone, Brit Sox and Nerds, is the working title, but I think, yeah, it was a really interesting interview with Jared Karabis, who does a lot of work for Barstool Sports, and he's kind of a bit of a social media guru, and he had some interesting things to say about David Price and a lot of Red Sox players, actually, so I'd definitely recommend it. I kind of wanted to see someone like John Lackey, who sort of it seems almost permanently grumpy anyway. I'm not sure that he's really big into Twitter, but I quite like to see what he would say to fans, because he's always swearing out there on the mound every time he gives up a homer. I wouldn't mind seeing that. I know John and Tom would probably be getting involved in some of that action as well. And I guess Brandon McCarthy probably already does it, doesn't he? I know he does a lot of Twitter interactions. I wouldn't be surprised if he DMs people as well.
I know that people like... I think Dan Harron did once upon a time and started calling people out before when he was still a major leaguer.
Yeah, Dan Harron is a good follow, actually. I'd recommend him. Right, so there was another reason we wanted to talk about Bregman, which leads us into your two all-star fantasy pieces that you put up on the site this week. So you kind of did an all-surprise and an all-disappointment team. Leading off with Bregman, how did he slot into your teams, and how do you feel about his first half? Because you had some strong views as a Bregman owner this season.
Yeah, I kept him in one of my keeper leagues as kind of my fifth round choice, thinking, oh yeah, he's in the Astros' potent lineup. He hit really well for the last month of the season after he hit like zero when he first came up. and then this season, he's just been a bit of a disappointment, really. He's hit around 250, and somehow his counting stats, like his runs and RBIs, just about kind of keep him ticking over, but that's more of a product of the offense rather than him himself.
Yeah, it's kind of an okay-ish line, isn't it? But I think we're missing... The steals are nice, I guess. Eight stolen bases is probably quite good in the climate where it seems like only Billy Hamilton is stealing anything these days. But it is kind of disappointing when you look at the other Astros players and you see them with 60, 70 RBI and runs, and Bregman's down there. I think he's not even up to 30 RBI by the looks of things.
Especially with the price that people would have paid in fantasy drafts, for example, where he was ranked so highly as a breakout candidate and has just kind of slumped.
Yeah, was it? He sort of snuck his way into the top 100 by the end of draft season, didn't he?
Yeah, definitely. That's in all leagues. That's not even in like long-term dynasty leagues, for example. He was quite well-renowned towards the top of draft boards, like you said.
Yeah, I would say to people, you know, don't worry about Alex Bregman. He is 23. I'm sure there is plenty more to come, and he's obviously on a great team. But I would certainly have picked, I think you mentioned Michael Franco, but I think he might have been my choice. I think he went a little bit later, but he has been disastrous this season. Were you quite close to putting Franco in there?
Yeah, I was quite close. I think the thing with Franco is that everyone knew he had some average deficiencies. He's a bit of an all or nothing swinger when it comes down to it. So there was kind of that little bit of risk with him.
Yeah, definitely. I've actually got some more to say about Franco a bit later, so I'll save that for now. Of the two teams, of both teams really, any candidates you can think of, which of the players you were kind of most surprised to be putting in there who you didn't really think would have any fantasy value this season, or players you thought would have tons and didn't make it, other than Bregman?
I think one of my favourite and more underrated stories is the one about Greg Holland, where he's just come off Tommy John surgery. He's been left on the scrap heap and loads of teams turned him down. And then he goes into Colorado and you think, oh, that's a recipe for disaster. He's going to get knocked around in there. But he's just pretty much picked up where he left off and started being a dominant closer again.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I've had similar thoughts to you. I thought, guy coming off injury, going to Coors Field, this is going to go really badly. And yeah, he's been remarkable. I'm sure Ben is extremely pleased with him. I can't really believe how well he's pitched so far.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, he's pretty much resumed where he left off, and he was right at the top of the game when he left off, and you could argue he's still there. It helps that he's got the Colorado offense to give him the leads to come in and save, but you've still got to give him a hell of a lot of credit.
Yeah, definitely. So I kind of wanted to move on, and this is based around something we got asked a little while ago, I think, from the guy who provides most of our question content, Rob Navera. He asked if we would, who we would put in like an all crap team, basically, the worst players. And I guess we can interpret this how we want, whether it's simply based on their play or something you don't like about them. Brian McCann and the Fun Police, that kind of thing. So I've put together my personal all-star and all-bust teams. We'll start with the all-bust teams. So who have you slotted into yours? What players have you you really just dislike, or you think are overrated, that kind of thing? Where are you at on your all-crap team?
I think I've got quite a few candidates that I always seem to make known on Twitter. So Right now, one of my least favourite players is Joe Blanton. you'll routinely see me swearing at him and quoting tweets, Joe Blanton enters game, and then I'll quote it with, final, Nationals lose. Just no matter what the score, like even if we're 15-1 up, he always seems to give up a home run and give up runs. Like, every time he comes into the game, I just don't want to watch anymore.
I'm gonna look up Joe Blanton now. he had a great season last year, didn't he, with the Dodgers, I think.
Yeah, he did. He was quite good. I don't know. When we signed him in March time, you felt like there was a reason he waited that long, and I just had a bad feeling that it was going to go wrong.
Oh, wow. Yeah, this is this is ugly, isn't it?
Yeah, he gives up a home run every other inning, I think, a bit like Sean Kelly as well.
Yeah, 3.3 home runs per nine. His FIP is 7.28, which is not good. Sometimes not you good. See a 7.36 ERA and you think, oh yeah, that'll come down, but I'm not sure. Joe's actually given up more home runs this year than he did all of last season already. So that's quite impressive. Well done, Joe.
Well done. Yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible. I have to say, my reliever,
who did you have on?
Well, a reliever that I really wanted to put in is Pedro Baez, and I think I may have brought him up before, but he is the slowest reliever or pitcher in baseball. It takes so long between pitches. You might as well just go off and, you know, make a cup of tea, make your dinner when Pedro Baez comes in, because the inning's probably going to take at least 20 minutes, even if he just gets three straight outs. It is excruciating. So a tip for you, if you're not an NL West fan or you don't watch the Dodgers very much, beware when Pedro Baez comes onto pitch. And he's a perfectly fine reliever, but yeah, can't bring myself to watch him. I will talk about Franco as well. I just, some of the pitches he swings at, he's obviously got talent and some decent power, but his decision-making is atrocious. And I think he's getting worse. Like, you sort of expect players to improve their approach, don't you, as they go through the league. And I'm not convinced that that's happening with Franco. He seems to somehow be, the longer he stays in baseball, the worse he gets at the plate. So he's really frustrating to me.
Yeah, I think, hasn't he gotten quite a bit fatter this year as well, or is that just me?
I haven't looked at a year-to-year comparison. I'd have to defer to a Phillies fan on that one. Any Phillies fans listening, please let us know how you feel about Michael Franco and if you think he's done a bit of a Sandoval over there at third. Someone else I've got to talk about, and I've been after this guy for ages. I don't know if you have this as a fantasy player, but there are some guys that you sort of just develop this permanent dislike to, no matter what they actually produce for one reason or another. And my guy, I think, with that is for several years now, has been Alcides Escobar. This is a guy doesn't walk ever, and I play in a lot of on-base percentage leagues, so I automatically don't like him. I hate all this Esky magic stuff the Royals say about him. He's an okay hitter when he's hitting for average. This year he's not. He's been worth negative WAR this season, hitting 226. He's got a 1.7% walk rate. So I can't stand Alcides Escobar. I think he's a pretty useless player, especially now. And the Royals took most of the year to move him out of the leadoff spot as well, which is a Ned Yost classic. He had about a 240 OBP and he was still leading off for them. So yeah, Alcides Escobar is definitely probably the number one guy in my team.
I think one of the other guys, kind of in a similar vein to that, who I've been abusing less this year because he's not on the Nationals, but Danny Espinosa, he is absolutely atrocious at the plate. I saw that this year he's hitting 162. Everyone thinks, oh, he must be having a bad hit. No, he's always been like that. And last season he kind of managed to save himself by hitting home runs, so he hit like 25, I think. He's got six this year, and maybe the one area of his game that he was actually really good at was his defense. And in Los Angeles now, he can't beat out Andrelton Simmons at shortstop, who's just otherworldly with the glove. So he has even less value, and I have no idea how he's still a major league player.
Yeah, I suppose there's a case to be made that when you have Simmons at shortstop, you maybe don't really need a second baseman.
Yeah, just let him cover the whole infield.
Yeah, I think he can do most of it. I heard that the Angels were actually looking at D. Gordon, which was kind of an interesting one to me. But that would be a definite upgrade at second base for them if they want to add another player to help Mike Trout, which would be nice for him.
Will Mike Trout ever get any help?
I think probably not. He'll just be stuck being there, making the Angels like an average team instead of a really terrible one and never actually doing anything in the playoffs. I'm gonna flip over because we probably said enough mean things about players for one episode. I won't promise that there isn't any more, but for now we'll leave off that and go over to the personal all-star team. So have you got a lineup of guys who you just love to watch, or what would be your dream to see out there? Is there defensive considerations, or what's your favorite thing to watch on the baseball field, I guess?
I do think if you take out say Bryce Harper, who everyone has a man crush on, I would hope. But I think one of my favourite players to watch is just Nolan Arenado. He makes everything look so easy on a baseball field. He was a Gold Glove defender a few years when he came up, and then his bat caught up and he's just been otherworldly. So this could finally be the year where he actually gets credit for what he deserves if the Rockies make the playoff, which seems to be some kind of qualification thing. You have to be in the playoffs to get MVP. So maybe this will finally be the year, because he's just a ridiculous talent.
Yeah, he is great. How much did Ben pay you to pick Arenado?
Yeah, Ben, if you're listening, I'll come collect my money later.
Yeah, I thought about Arenado, but I went for Adrian Beltre as my third baseman. I should be a huge future Hall of Famer, another exceptional defender. I love his antics with Elvis Andrews. They're really fun together out there. Just tremendous all-around guy. If you've never found a baseball reference page to go and look at Adrian Beltre, he's got some incredible career numbers. So great highlight reel player as well. Fun to go onto YouTube and look him up. So he's in there. I wanted to do a super defense infield, so I went for Francisco Lindor at shortstop as well, and then Javier Baez at second base. Thought that was lights out up the middle, super highlight combo. I wanted to bring up something very important which has been happening this week as well, and that's related to my pick at first base, which is Joey Votto, who is maybe my favourite hitter, not on the Giants. He is just a tremendous all-around player. I think he might be the active leader in on-base percentage. He's got it's a ton of line drives. He's really, really good to watch at the plate, but also he's hilarious. He trolls other fans like nobody else can. He's a really intelligent guy. His interviews are really fun to watch. But most importantly, he promised his teammate, Zach Cozart, that he would get him a donkey if he made the All-Star team, because for some reason, Zach Cozart really loves donkeys. And so Zach Cozart did make the All-Star team, and now Joey Votto is getting him a donkey, which I just think is amazing. And some of the quotes about this as well, I'll look some of them up. But how do you feel about this donkey incentive?
It's bizarre. It's certainly the first of its kind. You wonder if that's the reason he beat out Corey Seager, because I think Corey Seager's having a great season and Cozart's been injured. So maybe there was some inside knowledge going on and they've voted for Cozart that way.
I kind of want to see more of this, because we've talked, I think, a bit about the All-Star voting being a little bit silly and maybe doing something to liven it up. And I think this is a great way to do it. Just get players to start silly campaigns for things. It really works in the case of Cozart, who is having a great season, to be fair, but he's no Corey Seager. Here's a Votto quote. They're trying to pick the donkey now. I think he's narrowed it down to two options. Votto said, "We're just trying to make sure it's a donkey that can handle the stadium and the fans and stuff like that, because we're going to deliver it on the field. It's not just Zach's donkey. It feels like it's the fan base's donkey, because they did all the work to vote him in." Yeah, maybe that. I wonder if that what they're going to call it, like, because Adam Dunn was the big donkey, wasn't he?
I thought, was he Pronk? Am I imagining that? I don't know. Something like that. He had some ridiculous nicknames.
Yeah, just some of these. It's surreal. Some of these quotes. This is what Cozart said. "I told Joey I need a miniature one. I don't need one of those big boys running around. I think he's getting a baby donkey, so it's going to be like me taking care of a puppy, and we'll have to groom him." I can't believe that these are actual interviews that people are having.
They're taking it so seriously. Surely they have to burst out laughing whenever they do one of these interviews. Like, surely this isn't actually happening.
Yeah, I suppose in a world where Donald Trump is president, anything can happen. Oh, Adam Dunn is in here. It mentions later on that Votto tried to get Adam Dunn to come up for the donkey presentation ceremony, because he was known as the big donkey. Apparently Adam Dunn was not having it. Okay. Have we got any more All-Stars you'd like to mention? I'm going to throw in Robbie Ray. Everyone knows I love Robbie Ray. If you don't know why, then you probably haven't listened to the podcast before. He strikes a ton of guys out. Just got lights out stuff. He's been great this season. I love Robbie Ray. He's my all-star pitcher. Have you got a starting pitcher for your all-star team?
I think I'd have to pick Max Scherzer. He's taken another, somehow at 31, 32, he's taken another step forward this year and he's striking people out like crazy. But I think moving away from the top-notch pitchers, I think Alex Wood has been a great story this year. I think he's 10, 11 and 0. He's got a stupidly low ERA of 1 point something. So somehow he's out-pitching Kershaw. So that's just incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think the only concern with Wood at this point is health, and I hope he can keep it up because, I say that, I don't hope he can keep it up when the Giants are decent again. But while we're terrible, I suppose I might as well let the Dodgers have this. On the topic of Scherzer, well, I think we wanted to do a quick kind of mid-season awards, where they stand. I think he's probably the clear front-runner for the Cy Young at this point. Do you think he can hold off Kershaw and Wood and will end up winning it again this year?
I would like to think so. I think the main concern with him at the moment is he going to pitch too many innings come September and fall away? Because right now, Dusty Baker's trying to manage him and get him to pitch 7-8 innings each time to reduce the amount of innings the bullpen can give up runs. So we'll see come the end of the season. But I'd like to think that, especially given our division lead, we can at least rest him for a little bit towards the end and make him only pitch 5 or 6 innings once we've got the division wrapped up.
Yeah, I think they're probably going to be able to take their foot off the gas relatively early. I wanted to ask you about his swearing. As somebody who watches a lot of Nationals, does he do that every single start, or is that kind of a big moments thing? How does that work with Scherzer?
He doesn't really swear all the time. He has moments where he just gets completely in the zone and goes, just, I don't know, to some dark place in Max Scherzer's mind that no one should ever go. But he always stalks the mound. He puffs out his chest and walks around the mound after a big strikeout. So we're used to seeing that, and it's not a surprise when he starts swearing into his mitt like he did in that, I think it was a GIF that was posted before.
I think he was facing, was it Chase Utley in that about? So perhaps unsurprising.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about, do you think he could win the MVP as well? I think it's him and Paul Goldschmidt are kind of the front runners at the moment, certainly by wins above replacement standards.
It's possible, but I think for a pitcher to win the MVP, you need kind of a so-so group at the top of the pecking order in terms of hitting. So when Kershaw won it, there was no real standout hitting candidate. So he could just walk right on through to the NL MVP because I think there's too much stigma around giving the starting pitcher an MVP.
Yeah, it doesn't happen an awful lot. In the AL, is there any point talking about anyone other than Aaron Judge?
Not really. I had in my notes Jose Ramirez, who's been a bit of a dark horse. He came up in the MLB UK poll that was, I think it was run earlier today, but not right now. I think it's Aaron Judge all the way.
Yeah, and he's still a rookie as well, so rookie of the year is already over. How likely do you think it is that Mike Trout still catches him, even though he's missed, 6 weeks now?
I think Trout needs to play out of his skin to get the counting stats to even square up to Aaron Judge. Back on your rookie of the year point, my notes just have Aaron Judge, put your house on it, NL. Cody Bellinger, put your other house on it.
Yeah, I'm going to look up rookie of the year odds now because it's interesting to see.
Yeah, I think Cody Bellinger looks like by far and away the favourite. I think he's got 25 home runs now, and he came up towards the end of April, if I remember right. So I think he's the quite clear favourite at the moment there.
Yeah, Bellinger, I mean, he's been basically on the same pace as Judge. And as you say, it's only because he missed a few weeks. I think he did have 5 homers in the minors before he got called up. So I think he's hit the same number of home runs as Judge, just 5 of them weren't Major League. Let's see if we've got here American League MVP. Aaron Judge is the favourite. That's unsurprising. Is there a rookie of the year on here? Yeah, it's quite incredible. I still can't really believe Judge.
Seems like. Yeah, he was always a power prospect. So maybe the 30 home runs aren't a massive surprise. Maybe the amount are, but the fact that he's hitting 330 odd and got, he's going to get, I think I worked out in my article, he's on course for about 120 runs and 140 RBI, which is just insane numbers.
Yeah, that's nuts. And the home run derby was nuts as well, I have to say. It sort of seemed a bit like he was cheating, really. It didn't look like he had to really try very hard. I think someone made the point that, you know, he was hitting home runs to the opposite field just because why not? Because he could, even though everybody always just pulls all their home runs in the home run derby.
Yeah, it's not fair. I remember when Stanton first came up and we had kind of this same awe about him where they can hit him 500 feet and make it look so effortless.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. There's still like a little bit at the back of my mind that thinks, oh, surely somebody's going to figure out where to pitch to him. But at this point, it seems increasingly unlikely that anybody is going to, because, everybody's known how dangerous Aaron Judge is for 3 months now, and nobody seems to have figured it out.
Yeah, it definitely won't happen this season. It's something that maybe after an off-season of dissecting, there could be a bit of a sophomore slump, but I think the power is definitely here to stay. We'll see if he can hold the batting average up further down his career. I sure hope he does, because he's such a fun player to watch at the moment.
Yeah, I think even if he doesn't, he's still kind of pretty easily a 45-50 home run hitter every year with this kind of power, so I'm not sure the Yankees are going to mind too much. I thought the comeback players were kind of interesting. I suspect you have a leading candidate in the NL, but I want to see if you agree with me.
Unsurprisingly, I've gone for Ryan Zimmerman. I think everyone knows what a massive turnaround he's had this year. I think this could be one of the main success stories of all these advanced metrics, so stuff like exit velocity and launch angle, because last season he had one of the highest exit velocities in the league. He just wasn't hitting it in the air as much. He's tweaked his swing a little bit and now he's hitting 330, nearly, I think he's hit 20 home runs now. But I did think I had to even it out a bit and get some non-nationals in there. So I had Andrew McCutchen, who many people were doubting before the season. So I don't know what your thoughts on his turnaround are.
Yeah, I actually put McCutchen on my list as well. And he's obviously a guy who was at a very high level prior to the last year or two. And I think those kind of players do tend to be more favoured when they have those peaks and then dip down. Then I think people are more inclined to select them. So, I think what McCutchen's done is great. It's really good to see him back to more or less his old form. And I think he's a great, if Zimmerman does have a second half slump, then McCutchen is a great candidate to take that award. The AL is kind of an interesting one to me. I wondered if Jason Vargas is currently the favourite. Do you agree with that?
I was having a look around and it was difficult to pick out a standout candidate from what I could see. Vargas is a good shout though, because I guess with no other than Chris Sale being the front runner for the Cy Young, he could be up there for that. But in my notes, I think I went for Justin Smoke in the end. I don't know if it's really a comeback because he was never a good player before. He hit 223 before this year, and now he's at 294, 23 home runs, and he started the All-Star game. So I don't know if that's necessarily a comeback, but he's someone who's definitely taken the next step.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I was pondering this, and I don't think there's like a specific rule. I suppose it would be difficult to make a rule for how good you had to have been beforehand. Mm. I think some people suggested Mike Moustakas before the season because he missed most of last year with an injury. Again, he was never like a megastar. He had potential, but I don't think he had like an outstanding season. Corey Dickerson was another guy I wondered about because he kind of had that one monster year in Colorado and then has had a couple of injury hit seasons. And I think he was pretty terrible for the Rays last year. So I wondered maybe if Vargas tails off, then Dickerson might have a chance as well.
Yeah, I think that one's completely up in the air. I don't, if they're so vague on the comeback term, could Mike Trout be an option? Come back from his 6-week absence?
Yeah, can you have a comeback during the season? I don't know. That's a good question. I do wonder how people think about this. If anybody knows anything more about the comeback player of the award process, then let us know. I suspect it's completely arbitrary. But it would be interesting to know how people rationalise these choices. Right, we'll do a couple of awards that aren't given out, and we'll start with least valuable player. So who is your LVP so far this season?
I had two names down. I had Danny Espinoza. I don't need to go back into my hatred of Espinoza. The other one I had was Rick Porcello, which is slightly an odd one given that he won the Cy Young last year. But I actually looked into some of the stats and it's quite shocking how bad of a season he's having. He's 4-11, so he's got 11 losses. 4.75 ERA isn't horrendous at the moment, but he's given up the most hits and runs in the majors, which I was quite puzzled by because it didn't seem like he was having that bad of a season.
Yeah, there's a lot of black ink on Rick Porcello's baseball reference page at the moment, and it's not in the places that you want it to be. Yeah, leads the league in hits allowed, earned runs allowed, batters faced, which, I guess he's being left in games a lot, even though he's been terrible. He has pitched a lot of innings. But when the ERA is 4.75, not so exciting. I think I have to go with Carlos Gonzalez, who has just been absolutely miserable. And I don't know how much the Rockies were thinking about trading him this year, but I think he's kind of really torpedoed most of the value they could have got out of him for that. And their offense has been kind of struggling at times this year. And he's just been terrible. He's got a 57 OPS plus. He's hit 6 home runs, batting .221. I think he's been very negative on the wins above replacement department. He's arguably been the worst regular player in baseball this year. So I think Carlos Gonzalez is my pick.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens if the myth that is David Dahl comes back. Who I don't know what's happening with him this year, but he did really well end of last year. So if he comes back, do they have a logjam in the outfield and could Carlos Gonzalez miss out a bit?
Yeah, I think I saw that he played his first rehab game today, Dahl. So I don't think he's too far off. And they've got guys like Raimel Tapia as well. We kind of saw the Colorado outfield logjam coming before the season. But if Gonzalez keeps playing this badly, he probably is going to be the odd man out there.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say they've got Gonzalez, Tapia, they've got Gerardo Parra, who's doing really well there as well. So who knows?
You've got Ian Desmond, of course, Charlie Blackmon. Mm. So there's plenty of options for them, and Gonzalez is clearly the worst of them right now.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, there was one more that I wanted to do, only because I had somebody very specific in mind, and that is best hair. So who are you going for? And I have a suspicion I know who you might pick here as well.
There's no Nats bias going on at all. I think it has to be Bryce Harper again. He was just in a shower commercial in the All-Star game after that catch. Hat came off, flipped the hair back. All he needed was a catchphrase to say at the camera.
He was waiting to do that, wasn't he? Flip his hair back.
He's waiting to do it every single game.
Yeah. The Bryce hair flip. I'm actually going to go with Ulieski Gurriel. And if you haven't seen this, I implore everybody to Google Ulieski Gurriel hair because it's just superb. He sort of looks like something out of a cartoon, or I don't even know how to begin describing it. Pineapple, sometimes it looks like sort of the top of a pineapple, but he does a lot of things with it. Messes around, messes it up. Sticks it up in the air. Sometimes he sort of pushes it out to the side. It's very entertaining. Google Ulieski Gurriel hair and go on the old image search because you won't be disappointed.
I hadn't seen that. I've just Googled it now. That's different. Just like on the bench, sticks his hair everywhere.
Yeah, it's great. It's almost always different. So I quite like that about it. Sometimes it just looks normal and then other times they'll cut to him on the bench and he'll just have this shock of hair sticking straight up in the air.
I've only ever seen him with a helmet and hat on, and he doesn't look like that sort of player. He looks like a kind of like aging veteran who's a bit miserable, and then he's got the hair of a 22-year-old.
Yeah, it's great. yeah, definitely go check that out if you haven't seen it. Right, we've got a listener question as well to kind of round things off today, and it has come again from Rob, who is pretty much reliable for at least one listener question every week. And this is actually an All-Star Game based question as well, so it's highly topical. Rob asks us, why did Perez, that's Salvador Perez, dress like a blue Iron Man and Molina like a fat C-3PO? So, hard-hitting baseball analysis, Blake. Have you got any thoughts on what brought about these bizarre outfits?
I think it's the state of the current All-Star Game, I guess. Who cares what happens? They they took a photo in the middle of the game, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, that was weird. I mean, I guess I hadn't thought of this on the list of ways to jazz up the All-Star Game, was to make the catchers dressed like comic book characters and Star Wars characters. But I suppose if they got everybody to do that, that would be one way of making it more entertaining.
They don't call them the tools of ignorance for nothing.
Yeah, do you have any ideas? I was kind of trying to think earlier, like, what could you do to make the All-Star Game really mean something? I was thinking, like, could you try and make it somehow affect teams' draft picks? But there's a whole lot of complicated issues to do with that. Have you got any fun ideas for jazzing up the All-Star Game?
I think the main issue is the voting. Have something a bit different there. I don't think the All-Star Game itself has to actually mean anything, because I think that's coming for some criticism before, where it's decided who gets home field advantage in the World Series. But I think a bit like the NFL, where Pro Bowl appearances actually mean something, maybe if you have it weighted, so I think I suggested before, where half the percentage should come from like a player's vote or a manager's vote or something, and then the other half from the fans. So they're actually getting selected to the All-Star Game means something, because if you have teams stuffing the ballot box like the Royals and the Cubs have done in the past, it doesn't really mean as much.
Yeah, definitely takes the shine off it. I'd really like them to do something interesting with the field. I know on the Effectively Wild podcast, they're always talking about weird quirks of fields with hills and drops in them. I'd like to see, like, maybe if they put like a moat around the infield or something. I think that would be quite good. see how they deal with that. Just, you know, do something really wacky. So there was
have targets over the fence. If you hit them, you get double runs.
yeah, we could have the targets like at the Battlegrounds event. Yeah, things for players to aim for. That would be good. Yeah, just kind of more interesting things, as many interesting things you could put on the field without actually causing anyone to have a serious injury. Maybe it could just be like a giant bouncy castle out there. That would be quite good.
Bonus points if you hit the castle and make a catch.
Yeah, you could do spectacular catches, couldn't you? Can you imagine the likes of Kevin Kiermaier out there just jumping off bouncy castles? It would be amazing. Right, on that note, I don't know if we answered Rob's question. I think the answer was we don't know, and we're not sure that we care about these jazzy catcher outfits. But I think we'll wrap it up there. So, Blake, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on Twitter and what kind of things that you're working on for the site? Anything else you want to plug?
You can find me at Finney Blake, at F-I-N-N-E-Y Blake. I won't actually be writing for the site for the next couple of weeks. I've got the unfortunate chore of going to America for a couple of weeks. So we're going to see the Blue Jays, Red Sox. We're going to see the Athletics, Mets. And then we've got a couple Brewers at Nationals games to look forward to, including seeing Max Scherzer. So I'm quite excited about that.
Wow, that sounds great. Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll get some content from you on that trip. Sounds like you're getting plenty of games in.
Yeah, definitely. I'll have plenty to say about that. Maybe in a more braggy way than I intend.
Yeah, well, we'll look forward to that. You can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. I write about all sorts of nonsense. I had some prediction stuff over at Banished to the Pen this week, kind of checking in on the overperformers and the underperformers from our preseason expectations. Spoiler alert, the Giants have been really, really, really bad. So, yeah, go and check me out on Twitter if you want to see all of my work. And you can obviously find the site at batflipsandnerds.com. Follow us on Twitter at @batflips_nerds and facebook.com/batflipsandnerds. As we referred to earlier, Tom and John have started their spin-off Red Sox podcast that came out earlier this week. So definitely check that out. That will appear in your feed as normal. So if you don't want to listen to Red Sox, just delete that. That's fine. We don't mind about that at all. And yeah. Thanks for the listening. Please give us a rate and review on iTunes. It really helps people to find the podcast. And of course, send your questions in to us if you've got any good questions about All-Star catchers or Toby Bellringer or anything else you want to chat about, then please do drop us a tweet or an email, and we'll be happy to answer them on the pod. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.